Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation, where we talk about creating financial success with a special focus on business and real estate. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. Now, let's get to it. Hey, are you looking to expand and grow your business? Are you looking for that edge, that next step up, that paradigm shift? Well, one of the best ways to get you there is through a mentor or a coach. And today's sponsor, Trevor McGregor, he is the man. He's going to get you to be laser focused, to get you onto that next level. And I know from experience dealing with Trevor, he is a master coach, peak performance coach, well over 10,000 coaching hours through clients all over the world. And he helps you achieve better health, more wealth and freedom and contribution than you ever thought possible. Have that coach that holds your feet to the fire. Go on to Trevor's website, coachwithtrevor.com. Again, it's coachwithtrevor.com. And there you can get a free strategy session with Trevor. And you can decide if he's the right fit for you and you're the right fit for him. Again, it's coachwithtrevor.com. You will not be disappointed. Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend, Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars. To claim your free course today. Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation. I am your host, Todd Dexheimer, and with me is another great guest, Brian Doyle. Brian, how are you doing today?
I'm doing awesome, man. Thanks for asking. Excited to be here.
Yeah, glad to have you on. I've gotten to know Brian here over the last, close to a year, I suppose, and he's doing some good things in industry and wanted to bring him on to tell us a little bit more about what he's doing. And then, we've talked about some presentations that you've done. So maybe hit on some of those topics as well. So Brian, why don't you tell our audience a little bit about you and your company first?
All right. Well, my name is Brian Doyle. I live in Wayzata, Minnesota. And my company is really a side business, actually. I have a full-time job, and I think that sets me apart, makes me a little bit unique, because I think there's a lot of people in the world that have full-time jobs that would like to also invest in real estate. And I started investing in real estate when I was in college. I bought a house and rented it to some friends, and I just kept going from there. I just loved it. It's just, I think if you own a stock and it's not doing well, there's nothing you can do. You're just along for the ride. You know, if you own a piece of real estate and it's not doing well, you can go over there on the weekend and you can paint it, or you can, you can lower the rent, increase the rent. It's just like, you have so much control over this little business that, and it's all passive. It's not a business that demands your every minute either, which is very cool. So that's a little bit about me for sure.
So your job, is it full-time, you said?
Yeah, it's a full-time job, okay. And I sell drapery to hotels, yep. And I sell blinds to apartment buildings.
Okay.
And it's interesting, you know, what type of job I think you have in this industry, right? Because right out of college, I started selling windows to homeowners. I was terrible at it. It was during the week, you know, it just didn't go well. My next job, I started selling hazardous waste recycling services to businesses and governments. And it was awesome. It was a lot of fun, but it wasn't in the real estate world. Okay. So I think a lot of people, you know, if they have full-time jobs and they really want to be full, you know, or part-time real estate investors alongside, might consider finding a job within the real estate world. So it's super cool for me to like be calling on apartment building owners and then, you know, also have an interest in apartments, but I'm there as a vendor, you know? And one of my favorite people I met was Jim Soderberg, who you know. And I asked him one time, I said, hey, I'm doing this and that. And the other thing, I'm like, I'd really like to invest in some more real estate. And he said, well, you know, after we talked for a while, I was a vendor of his. And he said, well, you can invest with me, you know? So it was a great example of where my full-time job was not a hindrance to invest in real estate. It helped me invest in real estate. So
cool.
I think that's important.
So how do you manage both? How, you know, you've got your business, that's your real estate business, and then you've got your full-time job. How can you truly manage both and be successful at it?
Well, that's a great question. I think it's easier with the more units you get. I think when you have your first unit or your first house or something like that, right now I have about 55 units, and I own another. I have an ownership interest in as well, meaning I'm just simply an investor in other units. About another 450 units. So one great way to do it is just go invest with somebody else. They're out there doing it. You're already an expert at something. Keep being an expert doing that, you know, and then you can. You can keep doing your day thing, you know. If you want to start self-managing, which is what I did in college, I was just doing it on the weekends, you know. I mean, one house is not that much work. People think it's a lot of work. It's just not that much work. And then when you do it on the weekends and you do it after hours and, you know, all your buddies go out and they go golfing and they pay $50 to go do it, you know, well, my hobby was always real estate. I'd go make money, you know, at my hobby.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of the way to do it. Consider it a hobby.
Setting up your priorities, right? So that's getting taken care of. And then you're golfing with your buddies is maybe secondary.
Yeah. I was never good at golf. So. I never had to list that in the priority list, but, yeah, no, I mean, I definitely agree though. I mean, like at this point now I've hired a full-time property manager, you know, okay. She works for me from 8 to 5 every day and she's doing the bulk of the labor. I'm super lucky that my dad, is retired and he's just a good guy and he likes helping out. And so he and one other guy who works for me almost full time does all the maintenance, you know. Mm-hmm. So I keep wanting to say that, you know, it's not because you're lazy, you know what I mean? It's like because you got other things to do. You have to force this to be a part-time job, or excuse me, passive income job, you know. Otherwise you just can't do it. If you try to do everything else yourself, you can't do it.
Right. Yeah. If you're going in there and fixing toilets and, you know, doing all the repairs and then you're doing the leasing and you're doing the books and you're doing all that kind of stuff, you wouldn't be able to handle a full-time job and 55-ish?
About 55 units.
So 55 units and a full-time job, that'd be probably something would suffer.
I definitely think, I definitely agree on that. And I like the maintenance stuff, but it's like, you know, I've got a job that, you know, is fairly demanding, you know? So it's like, if I take an hour out of my day to go, or it's not an hour ever, right? It's a full day or it's half day to go fix a toilet, you know, it's like, I'm so much better off hiring that out, you know? Because one, my maintenance guy is better at it than I am, and he's more available, and he's just a good guy to work with. So,
well, I think that's important. Whether you're full time, you know, you're operating your business, your real estate full time, or whether you're doing what you're doing and have another job full time, you got to figure out what you're good at and what makes the most amount of sense. Cause a lot of people want to do it all themselves and think they're saving a lot of money. But if you can go make $50 or $100, and then just pay somebody $25, well, you know, hello, makes a lot more sense. You did less head damage. You got it done right. Mm-hmm. And you ultimately, you really saved money in the end. Maybe it doesn't look like that to that property itself, but when you actually look at the big picture, you save money. So,
yeah, no, definitely. And I mean, labor is expensive in general, but I mean, and I think it's important if you have one unit to go over there and fix the toilet. You know, I mean, I didn't know what I was doing when I first started. I mean, now I don't know if that's some point of pride, but I know a lot about it. But I mean, it's kind of fun. It's like, it's empowering to know that, listen, there's nothing that's going to be, you know, there's nothing that can possibly happen that's going to be the end of the world.
Yeah, I do agree with that. I know some people don't, but I do agree with that, that it's good to know how to do most of the stuff to your property or to your business, in your business, then start hiring it out. So I agree with that, because I think it helps you give a level of appreciation for that type of work.
Yeah.
And then B is, then you know what to expect, you know what's going on, and you know if people are taking advantage of you, and you know how to lead people.
Exactly. So, no, totally, exactly. I mean, you know, if somebody says, I've had that with a water heater, you know, it's $1,200 to replace a water heater, and, you know, it's like, what? You can go buy them for $400 and do it in an afternoon. So, it's good. So, yeah, that's fun. Yeah, I totally agree with that, so.
Well, let's talk, you've got some of these passive investments. I want to talk a little bit about that too. You don't need to necessarily go into great detail, but you know, how you kind of mentioned how you got hooked up, at least or potentially hooked up with some of them. But let's talk about those investments and, you know, how long have you had them and have they been successful? It's something that you would recommend other people do or something that you would do again?
Yes and no. So the most money I ever lost on a deal was through a passive investment.
Okay.
So what happened there was I bought a fourplex when I was maybe 23, you know, or maybe 4 or 5, right out of college, you know. Moved back to the Minneapolis. I went to college in Duluth. I moved back to Minneapolis, bought a fourplex, got a great deal on it. Worked on it for seven, you know, after hours, for 7 days a week, all on the weekends. I resited it. I fixed every unit up perfect. One of my buddies lived in the other unit next to me. And
so you lived in it as well.
I lived in it. I breathed it. It was my buddy for a while. So we even cited it. I mean, it was bad. And my parents were helping me on it. Everybody's helping me. So I think I bought it for $135 or something like that. Put some money into it. Ended up selling it in 2005 or so for like $400,000.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, it was just a huge gain, like $250,000 gain, you know. Yeah. And I think I bought it with leverage. So I think I'd put like $5,000. I put maybe another 30 grand into it, whatever. It was a huge gain. Well, I had, that's when I met Jim Soderberg. I didn't invest in his deal, his proceeds, but I had to do a 1031 exchange because I didn't want to pay the tax on it. Okay. Well, turns out the tax would have been cheaper, which is what somebody told me once. A guy named Kevin Doyle said the tax is sometimes cheaper, and it is. So that's good advice there. But I ended up investing in a TIC, which is a tenant in common. It was a $25 million office building, and it was I was like I think I was 5% owner, 1/20th of an owner. I was a tiny share of it, right?
Yep.
And in 2007 and 8, that building went downhill, obviously, and ended up going bankrupt. And I was along for the ride, and I lost my 250 grand. And I went into my accountant's office, and he's like, "Hey, you know, easy come, easy go." And I almost strangled the poor guy because, like, it wasn't easy come, and it definitely wasn't easy go. It was painful, man. Like, all that work I put into that fourplex was totally gone on paper, right?
Yeah.
But that's okay. So, I mean, would I recommend it? Yeah, I mean, I've got these other ones that are working out because I – trust the person. I trust the syndicator. I trust the guy that put it together. I mean, I trust him. If he says something, his word is his bond, right? So that's the person I would invest in. Okay. This tick that I didn't know the people putting it together, that you know, it had a few other problems. I wouldn't invest with just some random that I don't know because I don't know them, you know?
Yep.
So yeah, I would invest in these. I would continue to invest as a passive investor in some of this stuff because it's a great way to be involved in real estate. But you got to be kind of careful with it. It can bite you too.
Well, let's talk about this, this tech a little bit. So this office building, what kind of class was it? A class, B class?
So this is, you know, so after I went bankrupt, I realized everything I did wrong. Okay.
Yeah.
It was a class A building.
Yep.
It was 100% occupied, and it had premium rents. Now I knew nothing about the office market rent. Okay. So it was a class A building. It was like $250 a square foot. And it was like $18 per square foot per year. Okay. I didn't know any of that at the time. That was all top of the market premium stuff.
Yep.
When the downturn happened, tenants were like, "Oh, we're going to move, or we need to pay $12 a square foot now." The management company's like, "I don't know what to tell you guys." So first tenant, we said, "No, we're not accepting $12 a square foot." They left, you know. The next tenant, there was multiple tenants. The next tenant comes up and says, "We're going to pay $12 a square foot or we're going to have to leave." And we said, "Okay, we'll take your $12, you know? So now our net income's going down the hill, right?
Yep.
And we got to the point where we just couldn't afford it anymore. So the biggest takeaway from this deal, what I learned from this, and I hope somebody can learn this as well, because it was expensive. I want somebody else to learn this from my mistake. So if you, I don't personally buy class A office, or I don't buy class A anything because there's no upside, right? I don't buy 100% occupied necessarily because there's no upside unless you can raise the rents. Okay. But this unit had premium rents as well. So everything is all maxed out on this property already. There's nowhere for this unit to go except down. So,
So had this been a used building, class B in a maybe a class A location, and they did some improvements to get the rents from a 12 up to an 18.
Yep.
Then when the recession hit and it goes back to 12, you don't have a home run, but at least you're not going bankrupt.
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, I wouldn't say I went only. You know, I'd buy class A again. I take that back. You know, I'd buy it in a second. If there's a value add component,
yep.
If the rents are at $8 a square foot or whatever, you know, or, you know, you're going to buy a two-bedroom, Class A, two-bedroom apartment, at, you know, and the rents are only $500 a month, and you can bump the rents at day one, then great, you know, then there's a value. You can provide value.
When whoever bought that building off of the company you invested with did really well because they bought a Class A building towards the bottom of the market with depressed rents, with probably a few vacancies, and they were able to ride it out. Now, as the markets came back, they're probably close to that $18 a foot again, and they're
crushing. Killing. I guarantee it. And the worst part about this whole deal is it's like half a mile from my house. So every time I come home, I drive right by it. But it's okay, man. It's okay because like you learn from these things, right? That's going to save me $250,000 some other day, right? So this is all good stuff.
Cool.
But to go back to your question, would I buy it again? I would for sure buy a syndicated deal again, but it's got to be with somebody that I trust wholeheartedly, you know, that I know.
Okay. So for those who are listening that want to do that or want to become that person that people trust, let's talk first about how do you find that person that you trust? I mean, you found this tick. How did you find the tick?
It was presented to me through a broker.
Okay. So then you invest with other people that you trust. How do you find other people that you can trust?
Well, I think it's a big thing. So, I mean, you've got to decide where you are in your real estate career, right? If you don't own any units, okay, I think, and I even wrote it down for you, Todd, so I want to make sure I remember it. But, like, I think how do you find those people? You find them through the industry associations.
Yeah,
I'm a big fan of Minnesota Real Estate Exchangers. I'm a big fan of Minnesota Multi-Housing Association. They're both fantastic organizations that are top notch, that are they're available. But if you don't own any real estate right now, I think you have to decide number one if real estate's right for you. Because I hear this all the time. People are like, "I want to invest in real estate." It's like, well, then go buy something. I don't understand. I'm so confused by that because, like, you know, people want to. There's a lot of shows about real estate, obviously, we know that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and they want to do it, but like they don't pull the trigger. So if you want to do something, then you're going to do everything in your power to get it done. Okay. So fine. If it's what you want to do, make sure that's what you want to do. And then my next thing I think you need to do is get on a written budget. You have to create some sort of discretionary income, because the other thing I think people run into is, you know, they're like, well, I have this 10 grand to invest, but I'm living paycheck to paycheck. So if I lose this 10 grand, I'm really screwed. You know, but if you're on a written budget and you're like, okay, listen, in 1 year, I'm going to buy a piece of real estate. And I'm going to save $1,000 a month. I'm going to have $12,000 at the end of the year, you know, and if I lose it, I lose it. If I don't, I don't. Great. But I'm going to make it happen. Right. And people save for vacations, right? Save for this.
They save for a boat and a camper and a four wheeler and
yeah, it's all liabilities, right?
Right.
It's like, just make it happen. Right. Just do it. So, you know, that's when you have to get into your industry associations, and that's how you find, you know, these people. And a lot of them are after hours.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you really want to get deep into real estate, you know, and find these people, I think it's smart to look for a job that's tied into the real estate industry. There's a ton of vendors in the real estate world.
Yeah.
There's asphalt companies, paving companies, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, get in the corridor of whatever you want to do, whether it's real estate or whatever. If you want to start a business, get in that corridor, and that's going to be your best way into it.
Yeah, no. So I think that's a great way to find. And if you just start asking around, people are going to be like, oh, yeah, you know, do go talk to Todd Dexheimer. He does it, you know, or something like that, you know,
sure.
and whatever. So I think that's a great way to find out what people are up to.
Cool.
And find some good deals.
Yeah. So Brian, why are you still working? Why do you still have a job? You've got,
love that question.
Yeah. You've got a bunch of apartment buildings that you're invested in. You've got your 55, units yourself. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know exactly how much money you're making, but you could probably be fine without a job. So why do you have a job?
Well, I'm in sales. I've been in sales my whole life. I do love my job. I mean, I get a lot of enjoyment out of my job. Okay. I probably complain about it like everybody else does, sometimes, but I really do enjoy it. But, here's the main reason I have a job. Okay. Because I have the ability to live off my income from my job. Okay. And I have the ability, because of that, because I've created this false top of my income, then I'm able to live off my job income and reinvest my real estate income. So I bought a house in college. I didn't spend the money. I bought another house.
Yep.
I didn't spend the money from those houses. I bought another house. That's how you can lose 250 grand and be like, okay, it's not really my money. It's the business's money. It's a learning experience, or something like that. Right. And then you just keep going and going and going and it's great. Right. So I probably, like a lot of people, thought, well, maybe I should just quit my job and just focus on this and, or whatever. But it's like, great. If I do that, I'm done. I'm done real estate investing. I don't have any money left. Right.
Yep.
Because I have to keep investing I have to eat what I make in real estate. So that's why I do it. I live off my job. And
I like that you told us that, because I think so many people want to quit their jobs right away. They want to, hurry up and get rid of that income. And I did quit my job eventually, but I didn't do it right away. I was making, I replaced my income and then some. And then the other thing, the biggest thing is my wife, even still to this day, she still works. And so we live we live off of her income. I mean,
that's awesome.
Yeah. So all of our income that comes in from my real estate investing just goes pretty much right back out the door and reinvests in real estate. And so I'm kind of in a similar boat than you, but it's my wife that's working, not me.
Well, it's awesome. No, yeah, my wife is a school teacher. She also works, and she works three days a week, I think. She's awesome, and she does a really good job at it. So, but yeah, no, that's fantastic. You're doing the exact same thing, right?
Yeah.
But I think for whoever's listening, if they don't have that situation, maybe they're not married, or maybe if they have two income earners and they can live off one of those, that's awesome, man. I keep trying to teach my kids too. It's like, if you spend every penny you make every year from when you're 20 to, 80, and at your whole life, you're going to have no money.
Yep.
You're going to be totally broke, dead broke. Yeah. If you take maybe 25% out, every year, and you just let that 25% every year, you add 25% to it, you have more money than you know what to do with, because, eventually it's just going to start to snowball.
No, especially if you do what you've been doing and being smart about it, investing in your own properties and, putting it away, and not just, like you said, not just spending it, you're not just putting it in a bank either. I mean, you're putting it in real estate that's actually giving you returns and dividends. So,
and I think you got to get on a written, I hope I didn't cover that. You got to get on a written budget. You got to get on a written budget. If you're not paying attention to that, then you're and people think a budget is a hindrance, or it'll reduce the joy in your lifetime, life and things like that. But I totally look at it differently. Okay. You might be spending things on in your you might be currently spending things that are, that you're not getting that much value out of. Like, let's say you're spending $500 a month at the bar, but you'd rather have, you know, $500 a month to go towards real estate. Then, you know, then you want to, you know, you want to keep doing that. So, you know, a budget is just a plan, a spending plan to make sure you get the most value out of every dollar. And there's a lot of good things. I use Quicken. There's another thing called Every Dollar that's free. There's mint.com that's free. There's a lot of good stuff that's going on.
Yeah. My wife was actually reading an article and I'm like, why are you reading this article? But she was, it was,
I love it. What is it about?
Well, it was like what every 36-year-old needs to know about, you know, money. And I'm like, this is going to be an article for, not for you. Okay.
Yeah.
But anyway, she's reading off all these different apps that can track your spending and your budget, and it like itemizes for you that the technology out there. I mean, there's no excuse not to be able to understand exactly the dollars you're spending. So,
And I think I want to hammer the point home. It's not something that's miserable. It's get more value.
It's almost just my, like, it opens your eyes. It opens your mind up to like, what am I actually spending my money on? Cause you don't, half the time you don't even realize it. And you're just, dollars are going out. You're not realizing where they're going and how stupid it is that you're, you know, you're spending it. Just like when you spend your time. I mean, so many people waste their time on so many things. And it's like, you don't even realize what you're wasting your time on half the time.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. That totally. You know, that's the other thing I love to do is time block.
Yeah.
You've got a time block. You got to say, you got to make an appointment with yourself and say, you know, that's the other thing. People are like, oh, I don't have any time to do this. You know, it's like, well, you know, rather than going to Chipotle for lunch tomorrow, why don't you say from noon to one, you're going to do nothing but cold call real estate, you know, investors that you know, and just talk to them, you know, and I guarantee you're going to get a lot out of that. And you're not going to do it unless you're not going to do it when you get around to it. You got to put it on your calendar.
So. Yeah. That's the key is you, like you just said, you're not going to do it unless it's, you actually time blocked it. If you're just going to get around to it whenever you got time, you're never going to have time. People ask me that all the time. How do you do so much? Well, I just make time for it. I mean, I've got my priorities. So,
Hey, could we talk about for a second, and you tell me if it's all right or not, but like how to find deals, because so many people are talking about how to find deals right now. And I think it's pretty interesting.
No, I don't want to talk about that. Yeah, go ahead. Let's do it.
Yeah, we're going to talk about it. So like, because I was just looking through my notes here. The second house I ever bought in college was my girlfriend's house. Okay.
Really?
Cool. Yeah. Well, she lived in it. She didn't, wasn't her house, but
okay.
I was over there and the landlord shows up and he's all grumpy and because he had bought a house for his son in college. His son had long moved away from Duluth.
Sure.
And, he lives in Minneapolis. He doesn't want to be a landlord. He's just like an accidental landlord. So he drives up and he's trying to fix the bathroom because the bathroom's leaking into the kitchen. And he's fixing it, and he yells at the girls like they're doing something wrong, you know, again. And then he leaves. And then like 2 days later, it's leaking again, you know. So like he drives back up from Minneapolis, you know, it's like 3-hour drive. And I asked him one day, I said, hey, would you, you know, I'm 22 or 21. He probably thought I was some idiot. He's like, hey, I'm like, would you ever be interested in selling this house to me? And he's like, yeah, I would love to sell this house to you. You know, leak and all, right? You know, he was a motivated landlord. He was a absentee landlord. He didn't want top dollar. He didn't want to go put a sign in the yard and have the realtor tromping through. He just wanted to get rid of it, right? I own buildings. You own buildings. I'd rather just sell it. You know what I mean? It's easier, right?
Yeah.
So we ended up buying that thing. And what I learned that day is that every single building is for sale. It's all for sale. You just got to ask around and start talking to people. Everybody's motivated, right? People are like, oh, something, you know, I can't find anything for sale. Well, you know, how many deals did you look at? How many offers did you put down? You know, oh, I didn't do any. I just thought about it, you know? So, I think that's good. And I'll tell you how another way to exact actions people can take right now in order to find good deals. Like in Duluth, I know Duluth just because I went up to the college with it. You can go to their website, the UMD website, and you can click on housing, and it's got all the links, it's got all the ads for people advertising their houses for sale for next year. I guarantee there's a million people that like bought their kid a house. The kid moved on. They wanted to be landlords. Now they've been renting for 3 years to some, you know, drunk college students. They're sick of it. They want to move on. Their phone number's right there in the ad. You know, time block an hour, you know, a week or whatever, and just call down that list and say, hey, I saw your ad for rental. I don't want to rent it. I'd like to buy it. Can I do that? Are you interested? And the first person is going to say, hell no, stop calling me and hang up on you. But the second one's going to say, well, maybe. But by the time you get to the 10th one, you know, I bet one out of 10 would love to sell. So that means if you make 50 phone calls, you got 5 people that are interested in selling to you.
Well, especially in like you mentioned Duluth. So let's just talk about that. I mean, if you're calling people that don't have the 218 area code, which is Duluth's area code.
Yeah. I love that idea. Yeah.
Right there. You just hit on out of state or out of town people. So if you're calling anybody with the Twin Cities number or a Wisconsin number or
or California number, where you live, man, you can do this, right? So, here, I got to tell you this real quick too. So this is how I bought my fourplex. How much time do we have? You tell me.
Keep going.
Okay. Tell me when we're ready to give me the big hook.
Yeah.
Okay. So when I bought my fourplex, I bought it directly from the owner again, right? And the way I bought that is I talked to the city inspector in Duluth again. And I was talking to the city inspector when he was going around. He's grumpy. He's yelling at me. He's writing down all my violations. And he says, and I say, dude, you're a miserable person. Like, you are not.
Did you say that to the inspector?
I was kidding around. Okay. But I think so. Maybe I've cooked it up in my memory. But I'm like, I bet people hate you, you know? And he's like, oh yeah, everybody hates the inspector, you know? And I said, well, I don't hate you. You seem like a nice guy, you know? I said, but I tell you what, here's my business card, you know? And next time you find somebody that hates you, that doesn't want, you know, to keep owning this place, maybe they have a bunch of violations and maybe they're a pain to the city. Maybe their smoke detectors aren't in every room. You know, give them my card and just say, I'm a buyer, you know, and I'll fix it up. And he's like, yeah, whatever, kid, you know. Well, 3 months later, this inspector calls me up and says, hey, you ever buy in the Twin Cities? And I said, oh, yeah, I live in the Twin Cities. He says, I got this guy that owns a fourplex. We got talking. He owns a fourplex that he wants to sell. I literally bought it because of my connection with the city. And when I bought it for $135, it appraised at like $195. Wow. It was like, because I asked. You just ask, right? Just start talking to people. So that was super duper fun, I thought. So
you don't just go right on the MLS and then hope that a good deal comes up?
Well, you do if it's 2008.
Right.
And you have a time machine.
Yeah.
You know, but you don't. So, yeah, I mean, you know, the MLS is fine. I bought a bunch of stuff off the MLS. But not lately, unfortunately, because it's expensive.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. The other cool thing is after you get one unit, you can start calling the neighbors. Call the neighbor's house. Hey, I own the house next door. They're like, yeah, I know you. We hate you. Your tenants are always having parties. You know, like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know that. You know, I want to be a good neighbor. Also, if you're interested in selling, I'd be interested in buying. You know?
Yeah.
It's just a fun way to start talking to people. So.
Well, I think the key to what you're saying, though, is to you got to be creative and got to be active. If you're not going to be active and creative, you're not going to find deals.
Yeah, totally agree. So, Yeah, there's a lot of good deals out there. And I think people are terrified of losing money, you know? And I don't think you want for your first deal 100% of your assets to go towards that deal. But, you know, a percentage of it. The first condo I ever bought, I own a bunch of condos now. Most of those 55 are condos. The first condo I ever bought, I paid $106,000 for it, and it was in Hopkins, Minnesota. I bought it from a friend who was selling it. He was selling it. He was going to sell it on the MLS, and for $112,000, and I got a little small discount, basically the realtor fees off of it. Bought that, and that property went was only a 5 cap, and it went from $106,000 down to about $45,000, you know, down in the downturn, right? Because that was 2002, something like that, when I bought that. And then in 2008, it was probably only worth 45. And you would think with those number changes, you'd think, what a miserable thing. If you could go back in time, for sure you wouldn't buy that at 106. But I tell you what, I would have, because I learned what condos are. I learned what a condo is. I learned what a condo rents for. I learned what association does. I learned all this stuff, right? So even if you buy something now, and let's say it goes down in value, you know, I want to say, so what? Because, like, you're still renting it, and it's an education, right? So you spend $30,000 a year to go to college. Buy a condo. If you lose 30 grand on it, you're still getting an education, right? So now that condo still isn't worth 106. It's still not worth 106.
But you rent it.
But I rent it, and I don't care. And now I own 40 more condos.
Yeah.
Because of what I learned at that one. So now I can dollar cost average that loss over all those units.
So when you bought that in 2002 or whenever you bought it, and you bought it for 106.
Yeah.
You said you bought it about a 5 cap. Did you, I'm assuming you put some finance in on it. Were you cash flowing?
You know, I didn't put any financing on that.
Okay.
I actually went to my dad. I told you I got a really good dad. Yeah, I went to my dad. I mean, in college, when I bought my house in college, I went to the bank and I said, yeah, I'd like to buy this house. They're like, what do you know about real estate? I'm like, nothing. They're like, you have a job? I'm like, no, I don't have a job. They're like, we can't give you a mortgage. You know, so I called my parents and I was like, I'm going to send some paperwork. Just, you know, you just need to sign it real quick and send it back. And they're like, what is this for? You know what I mean? I said, no, you don't need to put any money into it. I just need your signature saying that if I default on it, you're going to end up owing a house in the world. And they're like, wait, whoa, we gotta go look at this thing, you know? So they came up and they signed for it and they looked for it, and it was awesome, you know? But same with this one, basically. I was like, I had like 50 grand saved up, because at that time I was either married or had a girlfriend or something like that. But like, we did the same thing. We lived off her income and saved mine, you know? So I had 50 grand, and then I called my dad and said, hey, I need 50 grand. You want to be a partner in this condo? And he was kind of like, all right, well, whatever. That sounds good. So that's how we ended up purchasing.
So your dad's got to love that investment. Great, great choice there.
but we still own it. And, you know, so I'm a 50% investor with him on that, and a few other condos.
But that throws, you know, that throws you some cash flow. Even if you put a mortgage on it, you might not have been able to mortgage it at 80%. But if you put a mortgage on that, it's still cash flow.
It would cash flow, but it'd be tight for sure.
It would be tight, right? But just enough. What I'm trying to say is, when people are looking at buying, like you said, and you would still do that deal. But if you can cash flow just enough, then if the market does go down from 106 down to 46, you don't need to, you know, you don't need to give that back to the bank. You're still cash flowing. And even though today it's still probably not worth 106, or maybe it's close, you know, you're just buying because it's making money.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I tell you what I love about condos for somebody's first deal. You don't deal with the snow removal. You don't deal with the lawn mowing. You don't deal with the exterior maintenance. You just work on the inside of the unit. It's awesome. And you have the economies of scale of a larger building. So this one condo is in a building with probably 20 other units, right? So there's one roof for 20 units. So I own one condo, but I only own 1/20th of the roof. Yeah. So I kind of get the benefits of the of an apartment building ownership, but I don't have to own an apartment building.
Apartment.
True. There is some downsides. You know, the association funds can sometimes be poorly managed.
Yep.
And there's some crazy rule changes that you got to be careful of. Like the association could say, oh, well, now we're only going to rent. Owners can only sell to owner occupants. No longer investors or whatever, right? So you might have to be the president of the association. You might have to run for the board or all that. You have less control over the other occupants. If the person next door is driving your tenant crazy, you might not have that much, you know, control over what they're doing. So,
sure.
Kind of cool.
Well, Brian, I want to shift gears a little bit. That's all right. I want to ask you, what would you have done differently? And this is just speaking to your investing. So what would you do differently if you could do it differently?
If you could go back in time and rewrite history, I would not have bought that office building. even though I appreciated the education, I would have rather had the money, yeah. You know, but I mean, you know, if I were to redo it differently, here's why I'm a real estate investor. Okay. I love passive income. I love it, man. Like if I'm working at my day job, people are still paying rent. You know, if I'm in Colorado skiing, people are still paying rent. It is a passive income. Everything is outsourceable. You can hire a property management company to handle anything. You can hire a maintenance company to handle it. It is a 100% outsourceable income, you know? And I love that about it, right? So I think back to, I've actually asked myself a question. What would I do differently if it was 30 years before right now? I would buy every piece of real estate I could get my hands on, right? What would I do if it was 40 years ago? I'd buy every piece of real estate I could get my hands on, right? What do I do with 10 years to go? I'd buy every piece of real estate, okay? So so let's take that forward, though. What would I do? So, okay, knowing that if you could go back in time, you'd buy more real estate. What am I going to say in 10 years? I'm going to say to myself when I'm 50, I'm going to say, I wish I would have bought every piece of real estate I could have got my hands on.
Yep.
Right? So that's what I'm working on right now. That's what I'd do differently.
Perfect. Well, that's the next question is where are you going to be in the next, 10 years?
What are you going to be? That's a great question. I really struggle with that. I tend to overthink just about everything. It's a blessing and a curse.
Yeah.
I know you probably do the same thing.
Yeah.
you gotta overthink things, but I'm right at the crossroads of my career, my real estate side of things, either I'm going to, which I'm sure I'm gonna start doing this, starting to syndicate deals.
Yep.
You know, I'm going to probably start syndicating deals because I will not personally live long enough to buy a skyscraper downtown Minneapolis. I mean, I just won't live long enough to do that, you know, and if I want to do that, then I've got to start syndicating deals. And there's a little kid inside of me that wants to do that. You know what I mean? But it's hard, right? I'm right with like probably everybody else that doesn't, that wants to buy a piece of real estate because it's like, I've got a good life. I don't know if I really need that. So I don't know. But my goal right now is my absolute minimum number of units I want to hit is 185, because I talked to a CPA that does a lot of work in the industry, and according to him, that's the minimum you need to be 100% passive and have a little staff handling everything.
Interesting.
So I didn't question his number. I just went with it.
Yeah. So, and that's not including, obviously, the 400 whatever that you have.
No, that number sounds big and impressive, but that's just, you know, that's just a
ownership interest.
Small ownership interest in it's about 7 or 8 buildings.
Sure. So, well, cool. I'll partner with you on that skyscraper.
I like it.
Let's do it.
Yeah. The numbers are the same, right? I mean, the numbers are the same from a condo to a skyscraper. It's just don't. A
couple extra zeros.
Don't be 10% off. that's definitely what I'll be doing.
What are some books that you like to read? Name a favorite book or two that you like that you're reading either now or that you have read.
I don't know if you can see it up there. I've got about 10 of them over there. I've got 10. 10 of the same type of book, because I give it to everybody that asked me for one. I love The Millionaire Real Estate Investor.
Okay.
That's like my favorite. Of course, Rich Dad Poor Dad. And then Multifamily Millions is a good one too.
Yeah, I love that book.
But The Millionaire Real Estate Investor. And you know what you learn in that book? You don't need to own 1,000 units to be well to do. You need like 20.
Yep.
I mean, it's unbelievable. So,
yep. If you buy 20 units the right way and manage them properly, you'll do very well.
Yeah, you got your whole life set up. Yeah, no, it's great. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's easy.
So Brian, in just a few, I guess in a minute or less, try to tell us what your definition of the secret of financial freedom is.
Ooh, I like it. Secret of financial freedom.
Or how to achieve that. Yeah.
How to achieve it. You achieve it through set goals. Absolutely got to write your goals down. If you don't have a roadmap, you'll never know where you're going. And you've got to follow those goals. And you've gotta live below your means, man. You've gotta do that. If you don't live below your means, you'll never be a real estate investor. Because there's too much risk in real estate, and if you lose it, then you won't. But I think the true definition of financial freedom, if that was the question, is a passive income. It's basically whatever your freedom number is. And people say it different ways, but as long as you have enough passive income to live, to maintain your lifestyle, that's financial freedom.
Yeah. I love it. Maintaining is the key, right?
I think
so many people go into retirement downgrading and downsizing. I'm like, well, why would you want to do that if you got more time on your hands?
Yeah.
Don't you want to be doing more stuff? Like, don't you?
I spend less money when I'm when I'm working.
Yeah,
because you're working, you don't have time to spend money.
You know? Exactly, you don't have time. And then when you retire, you're gonna have time. You're gonna have time to go and get good at golf finally. And
yeah,
so
that'll never happen.
Cool. Well, Brian, I appreciate you being on the show. If people want to get in contact with you, how do you want them to reach you?
That's a good question. Probably my email is probably the best way to do that. My email is, I've got a bunch of different emails, but my property one is Brian, B-R-I-A-N, at doylepropertygroup.com. That's spelled doylepropertygroup.com.
Cool. And we'll put that in the show notes too.
Yeah, and I've got some, from a couple of the different presentations I've done, I've gotten some lessons learned. I've got kind of how to create, my SMART goals and some action plans. So if anybody emails me, I'm happy to forward those documents.
Well, Brian, maybe we'll have to set you on another one of these and we can go through some of that stuff as well.
Dude, I can't wait.
So, all right.
Thanks, Todd.
Yeah, I appreciate you being on the show and taking time out of your day. Have a great rest of the day, man.
You too. Thanks so much.
Hey, special thanks to Brian Doyle for joining us on the show. And appreciate Brian coming on and talking to us about what he's done with actually still being full-time employed and what he's done with his business growing from, I guess he started buying rental properties when he was in college. So that's impressive in itself. But growing now to 55 units and owning another share of 400-plus units, I think that's speaks volumes to, what Brian's doing. And then he still has his job, and a job that he enjoys enough to keep. Likely he could just quit his job and be fine. His wife still works, so they would probably be fine. But he enjoys that, and he's trying to use real estate to build wealth. And so I appreciate him coming on the show and talking to us about, you don't have to become a full-time real estate investor, full-time at another second business. You can also still work full-time and do this on the side. So I appreciate him sharing that and his insights. So three things I took from Brian from the show. One is get your finances right and live below your means. And so many people don't get their finances right. They don't know what's coming in, or maybe they know what's coming in, but they have no clue what's going out. And they don't understand what they're truly spending their money on. What are you truly spending your money on? There's so many apps out there right now and so much software, and there's all kinds of technology that you can take advantage of that tells you exactly what you're spending your money on. And this is important if you're a business owner, a real estate investor, or just your own household. Get your finances right and figure out what you're spending your money on. Number two is, be creative. And Brian talked about how he's finding rental properties, right out of college. He's talking with the landlords and how, what he's doing. He's calling neighbors and stuff like that. And so be creative. Right now in real estate, in most industries, business industries, things are tight right now. People want a lot of money for their business. People want a lot of money for their real estate. And so if you're going to try to get something at a slight discount, you're going to have to be creative. You can't just go on some, and go onto the MLS and take what's actively listed. You've got to be creative, reach out to people, find people that have a motivation to sell. And that goes if you're buying a business, if you're buying real estate, whatever you're doing. If somebody has a motivation to sell, you're going to have a better chance of getting a discount than if you just go onto the open market. And then lastly is, buy with upside. And also I'm going to kind of add on to that, because this is his whole discussion is buy with upside and know who you're getting in business with. And that's really important. Brian talked about getting involved in this tick. He didn't know the people. And then the whole part about the deal, and this deal was, stabilized A-class building. It was the height of the market, which you never know when the height of the market is. But if you're buying the same way at all times, you're buying conservatively and you're buying with value that can be added, then we're not as concerned about the height of the market. We're always, wanting to pay attention, but we're not as concerned. So again, whether you're buying a business or real estate, or building a business or real estate, you have to be conservative with your approach. And then you have to really pay attention to who you're getting involved with. And that's whether you're, as Brian was, investing in a tick where other people are in control. That's really, really important if you're investing in a syndication or a tick or anything like that, where other people are in control. But even when you're owning your own business or you're owning your own real estate, you should understand who you're getting involved with. You should understand the attorneys that are helping you out. You should understand the brokers that are quote unquote giving you good advice. And you should understand the property manager who has your best interest in place? Do they really have your best interest in place? So you have to understand who you're dealing with and know that the people you're dealing with, your team, are some of the most critical people to making it a success or not. And as Brian found out, he had a bad team and they failed him, and they lost his money. And that's a lot of money to lose. And Brian's got a very good outlook on it and a good attitude about it. But it's easy to get burned if you're not paying attention. So pay attention, get involved with good people, and then buy with value. So I appreciate Brian and his valuable insights and his stories. Fun to have him on the show, and we'll probably have him back here to talk more about some of the other stuff that he has discussed with the Multifamily Housing Association and stuff like that. So go on to our webpage. You can go on to pillarsofwealthcreation.com. Check us out, see what we're doing, what we got going on. You can listen to our podcast on there as well. And also check out our Facebook page, make some comments. We'd love to hear what you want to hear. I want to give you what you want. So if you have something that you want to really learn about and know about, let me know. I'll try to find a guest that has it, or if I know it myself, I'll talk about it myself on a Hump Day Hustle. And then go on to iTunes or wherever you're listening and give us a rating and review. We want to hear from you that way as well. Shout this out on, you know, Facebook and LinkedIn and wherever else you are, and share it with others. I'm Todd Dexheimer. I am signing out. Make every day a Saturday. Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars to claim your free course today.